just put it right here?
Yeah, right there should be fine.
Okay.
And then you can just slide it into your pocket.
Okay.
Have a good day.
It should be good.
Okay, great. Is that on? It's on.
Yeah,
okay.
It's on.
All right, good. All right. Yeah, I didn't wear it in the first session.
Yeah, it's just for 40 minutes.
Okay, that's fine.
It's a pretty small room.
Okay. Do you have the stamp?
Do I have what?
Do you have the stamp for the session?
He doesn't come in here.
We'll watch. We'll watch. We'll watch. Tell Brett I said to go. Boyd Egan, you are. I haven't seen you in 28 time. Years.
Yeah.
I was in Ron Long's New York Life Shop down in Provo. That's where I started.
Okay.
John Lloyd, do you remember John Lloyd?
Yeah.
He was my sales manager. I left, I got to New York Life and left in the 16th month.
Because.
Good.
Still.
Dennis Graves and I just,
and
I just said, went over to Larry Hanks' shop at Mass Mutual. So
yeah.
I thought I recognized him. You don't know where it went? Well, let's see. How many did I chase off telling him to go to Brett's session? How many left? About 10? Eh. Okay. That's fine. That's just the way it is. I haven't seen you in a long time either. Seen a lot of. Do you still have the building over on the west side of the interstate? Is your office there anymore?
No.
No? No. Good. Let me ask you a question. On the news reports about that fire up in Weber Canyon, you know, just south of Ogden, on one of the news reports, I swear there was a guy from Cambridge. I had his Cambridge shirt on that was being interviewed by the news team. Was that anybody you're aware of that lives up in that hill? I looked. I thought, just when I was trying to figure out who the guy was, off the image. You know? No, I know Mike. I know Mike. Well, looks like a lot like this guy. Okay. Well, she's going to get the date stamp, so let's get going. Oh, there. Well, she's chasing you down. Good afternoon. My name is Brad Coyle. I don't think anybody's here to introduce me, so that's fine. We'll just get to it real quick. I'm with One Financial Advisors and with National Pension Partners, which is a nationally recognized TPA of defined benefit plans and other assorted retirement plans. I've been in the financial advisory business for 29 years. Most of the people I work with are business owners or key executives. Most of my business is across Northern California, Utah, Idaho, Nevada, Arizona, a little bit in Colorado, and in the next year or two, I hope to hit Pennsylvania pretty hard for a reason. Anybody know why I want to hit Pennsylvania hard for a reason? How many of you have read the tax maps for both corporations and or individuals to see what the highest marginal tax rates are in the nation? When you get a chance, take a look at how bad C-Corps and professional corps are getting beat up in Pennsylvania. Take a really good look. Okay. Today's session is on the six errors that might kill or damage a business. I want to do this in a light fashion. I've brought some extra stuff, but one of the first things I want to speak about, right there, is this. I really appreciated Van Mueller this morning. I really deeply appreciated a couple things he said. One is I loved his passion for this business. And I have to tell you, I, in particular, have a deep passion of working with business owners. By the way, can everybody hear me? Fine? Just fine. Okay. And I'll tell you why. And he stated he didn't want to wax political. I will. Okay. I am of the opinion that the upper middle class in this country is getting hollowed out very quickly. And most of those people are small and medium business owners. They're getting killed. The Fortune 2000 or the Russell 2000 or whatever metric you want to use, those people have already bought and sold the Congress. Congress is full of corporatists who represent the largest corporations in the land. As far as the upper middle class, them mostly being business owners, they're getting killed. The United States Treasury adores a business owner who will not do any internal planning. The U.S. Treasury adores business owners who will not do their business continuation planning. They also adore people who will not gather the experts around them to find ways to pull money tax favorably out of their organizations for themselves or anybody else they choose. And I also believe if you'll take a look at other metrics, meaning who do you think provides most of the jobs in the U.S.? What is the deal? I'm long past in this business. I am long past the pursuit of income. Although, don't get me wrong, I still love it every day. Okay, but I'm past that. I'm into psychic income in this business, which means I enjoy what I'm doing so much I know I will never retire because I want my last breath to be tax deductible. Okay? All right? And the point is that I have a very high passion that we have to do everything we can to engage business owners to help them in these affairs before they get hollowed out. And I feel very, very strongly about that. Now, I need to gauge a little bit the kind of people I'm speaking to today. By the way, we won't be, those of you who lean a little bit more toward the property casualty side of the business, we won't be discussing that today at all. We won't be doing P&C stuff. But who in this room has engaged at least five business owners and you've worked the case from start to end, no matter how long it took, in the last 5 years? How many? Okay, of those that raise their hands, how many have done it in the last 10 years? Okay, all right. Well, what I'm going to start out with is a little bit of a discussion about, what did I do, get rid of it? Where'd it go? Crap, I got rid of it. Okay. Come on, baby, come on. Come on, come on. I know you can do it. Come on. There we go. Okay, the first thing I want to say is you can make a great career and living working in just this marketplace. But there's some prices you're going to have to pay to be able to do well in this marketplace. And let's talk about what those are. The first thing I want to get through, though, is the 9 reasons to do this. Now, I need a reader because I don't want to look back at the screen. So let's see. You're young. You've got nice vocal cords. Here we go. Now, beller it out as I hit him. What's the first reason to work in the business owner marketplace?
Bigger cases, premiums, and deposits on average.
Anybody got a problem with that? Next.
Higher application counts.
That's right. Your app counts get bigger because he or she who controls the work site controls the industry. Next.
Different money psychology, firm's checkbook, not personal.
What do you think I mean by that?
Yeah,
working with the head of household marketplace, what are the two worst months of the year historically? Christmas, obviously, December, and the other one might be? Yeah, but there's actually one that kind of edges his nose in front of you. It's either July or August. Disneyland. So you're competing with Santa Claus or Mickey Mouse. It's one of the two, all right? It's one of the two. With business owners, it doesn't work that way. Business owners view the corporate checkbook as just moving one set of money to the other pocket. And we're done. That's how business owner looks at. Just working with business owners in December is a phenomenal experience because they're in a hurry to get the business off the books, get the tax deduction if they can get it, et cetera. Nick Palaveda right here, some of you have probably been to some of the sessions. What is December like in National Pension Partners?
Well, very few people attended our session.
Okay.
Insurance and qualified
Right.
So you understand that 200,000 reduction is very meaningful. So in December, they're looking to pay a huge tax bill, or
right.
be implement some form of
plan. Right.
And
right.
they get that large tax deduction.
Right.
So it goes crazy from, until December 31st.
If you work with business owners, look forward to November and December being sheer bedlam. You're rarely going to get holiday time off to travel out of state or whatever. You're going to be on the phone. You're going to be on the plane. You're going to be staying up late and a lot of snow on your wingtips. That's just the way it works, okay? But it's a whole bunch of fun because they are motivated. None of this checks in the drawer crap. That check has got to clear. All right, next.
Daytime activity.
Anybody have a problem with that? Okay, next.
Increased ability to cross-sell needs, concepts, and products.
I get to use the entire toolbox with business owners. Sometimes I'll even find a vendor to customize a product for them. Okay, go ahead. What do I mean by that? Somebody in the back. What do I mean by that? That last one. Who else am I cross-selling? Their attorney, their accountant, their banker, their human resource people, their vendors, their government officials, you name it. Next. Okay, forgive me if it appears I'm trying to wax a little dramatic, but here we go. I'm old school. I've been in the business 29 years. I am stunned at the degradation and the loss of the skill sets in our industry to engage business owners. I attribute this to two or three things. One is we are seeing a large part of retail and advisory financial services migrate over to the RIA model, where we have a whole bunch of money managers and investment managers and advisors, and we have a whole bunch of stock jocks and all that kind of stuff. And at the same time, we see most of the career shops, where have they gone in the last 15 years? Gone. And the entire training, level of training that goes on in our industry to deal in this kind of market just goes right out the drain. And so you don't have a lot of competitors. You have a lot of pseudo competitors who've been to one or two workshops and learned a few buzz phrases and learned how to do a few things. And like, you know, you may be like at Morgan Stanley, oh, we're going to hand it off to the resident guy who's the business specialist. And you find out that person isn't worth smoke, okay? Just a week and a half ago, I opened a business case. It was very, very easy. This business owner's been working with a Wells Fargo advisor for about 15 years, is even distantly related to the Wells Fargo advisor, was willing to at least take a risk to speak for 30 minutes. I only asked three questions. That's all it took, was to ask three particular probing, highly emotional, very provocative questions. And I opened up that Pandora's box, and the guy looked at me and he said, "Now, what's your background again?" And I handed him my bio, and he flipped it over and looked at it, and he goes, "I've worked with a lot of people in your business, and nobody's asked me those kind of questions with that boldness, but you are not here to mock me, are you?" I says, "No, I want you to get what you deserve, and we need to get down the road with the answers on these, or you're not going to get what you deserve." "Okay," he says, "what else do I need to know?" "The people you've been working with, if we proceed, you cannot march them down to those people for two reasons. One, they don't deserve it, and two, I can't afford it. Do you agree to that or not?" He says, "Ask me some more questions, and I'll tell you." I says, "Okay, that's fair." So I asked him some more and peeled his life open. And this often happens. You'll get business owners to tell you things they'll never tell their spouses, that they never tell their other partners, etc. And he goes, "I get it." And I go, "Okay, do I need a formal document saying you won't?" And he says, "No, we're done. We get it." He's going to be a great client. It's going to take me about a year and a half to get this case done, but that's fine. Okay, I'll tell you one of them later. Tell you one of them, sorry. Okay, next.
It is an interesting market in which to work.
It really is. It's not just interesting, it's demanding, and it's nerve-wracking, and it's fun, and you can go slightly insane working with business owners because they are who they are, but nonetheless. And lastly, can you tell me what that means? Because somebody tell me what I mean by that. Okay, real quick. You and your partner have a growing business and you have like 45 employees. This is a typical case, right? We're going to work on your business continuation, your salary continuation, your group benefits. Then we're going to do voluntary payroll deduct. Then we're going to find a way to carve out your key employees and do some either deferred comp, some SERPs, maybe some other salary continuation type work. Then we're going to get into your estate planning. And by the time we're done, I'm going to know all 40 of your relatives and your partner's relatives. Within 3 or 4 years, I will have written over 200 apps, traveled to 2 states. How many pocketbooks do I pick up? I haven't even finished. I said I was going to put in a voluntary payroll deduct plan. That means I have rights to all 43 employees to fill out a fact finder if they will meet with me, and I demand that their spouses come. And in the next 3 months to maybe 6 months, I'll do 5 brown bag lunches. I'll buy all the pizza and donuts. I don't care. Does anybody have a problem with going through 120 fact finders? I don't know. Do you? Okay. Kind of thing. Now, that's what I mean by diversification of pocketbooks. Now, there are some prices you're going to have to pay to get good at this. And this is the part that really busts people down. I have a proprietary course that I've created over 20 years called Making Business Your Business. And there are 3 levels of the course. And this is what I found out. If I have a group of 10 financial services individuals who go through the level 1 course, there are 12 sessions the first time through. By the time we get done, of the 10, how many of them will make a bona fide effort to open a business case? It's 4, actually. It's higher. Give them some credit because I do teach them all the scripts and everything else, right? Okay? How many of them, especially if they get their nose broke a little bit, because this happens a lot with business owners, okay? They get in there and find out, oops, you know, there's some things they need to do. How many of them proceed further in the case of the 4? There's your 3. One of them will drop off. Now, how many of them will do similarly 6 months to a year later on their own? 1. Do you know in 20 years those statistics have not changed? If they go through the course the second time, though, the numbers double. There is this unbelievable, tenable fear that people in our business have about engaging business owners because they think business owners, well, they got MBAs and they have degrees and they do this and they're big construction guys and they have big prowess. And you think they know everything and you're deathly afraid of looking what? Stupid. Guess what? With only that much more knowledge, you can know an amazing amount of things that they have no comprehension over, and especially their accountants and their attorneys. It is stunning. You don't have to know everything. Believe it or not, some people just want a hole drilled. They don't care how the drill works. They just want the hole drilled, and you have to find that out. So let's take a look at some of those prices that you have to do. 1, you're going to need to increase your accounting, tax, and legal knowledge base. And secondly, you're going to have to be able to interpret it in little stick drawings and in little mannerisms of language that they can understand. You're going to have to take very complex concepts and reduce them to the simple. Believe it or not, the best work you'll ever do is in a restaurant on a napkin, and you're drawing the stick figure from their perspective upside down. You've got to learn how to do that. And it's something they can take with them and shove in the front of the pickup, and every time they're out in the project, they pop it up and go, yeah, this is what Brad talked about. Wow. Like, we got to do this. We got to talk again. You're going to have to, you don't have to know everything, you just have to know a little bit more. What's a second price? You got to master more of the tools in the toolbox. If you are somebody in our business who's become particularly fond of some financial instruments or a particular policy or contract and you start to worship it, you're in trouble in the business owner marketplace. You're done. Somebody's going to get in behind you and they're going to strip you out. Next one, you'll need to learn a different financial advisor cycle. When you work with business owners, it's not just a matter of target, approach, open, fact find, design, soft close, hard close, get issued, referrals, and out the door. Next, it's not that cycle. This is another part that drives reps in our business crazy, working with business owners, is it becomes a little bit like herding cats. It's organized chaos. It really is. The financial advisory cycle is not what you think it is. Another, WIT stands for what it takes, by the way. I always view this as wig over WIT, what I've got over what it takes to find out where you are in the standard. What it takes, 4, you're going to need to learn to be patient and innovative in your thinking and processes. You will need to be willing to sometimes see cases languish in timing cycles, but also be nimble enough to hurry up and get something done in a hurry. The best way I can illustrate this I go to Vegas a lot. I've been to Vegas a lot in my career. How many of you know Vegas at all? Okay. You know where McCarran Airport is? Okay. When you go to McCarran Airport and you go to the east-west runways, just south of there is a street that runs east and west. It's called Sunset. Anybody know where Sunset Road is? Okay, you know what I'm talking about. When I'm down there, and if I'm particularly, if it's not 150 degrees, okay, I don't do well in the heat. Anything above 80 and I'm an axe murderer, okay? But anyway, if I'm down there and I have a little bit of time, and particularly if I need to think, because, you know, Vegas is a noisy town, I will park my car at the main post office there on Sunset, and I will walk a mile and a half down toward Green Springs, and then I'll come back to the car up and down Sunset. The beautiful thing about when you go east on Sunset, especially at night on a dark night with no moon, about sometime between 7 and 9:30, the planes that are lined up westbound with a west wind in their face, if you will look, you can see up to 50 sets of lights all the way out over the Grand Canyon and everything else. Sometimes the planes are coming in off L.A. and being routed the other way or whatever. There are some nights it's really spectacular. I have, at the most I've counted, is about 47 or 48 in a row. Now, I want you to think of that image visually in your head. Business cases are like that. You get them all lined up, but they don't come in an orderly fashion. Some of them crash. Some of them trade spots. Some of them land before the others. Some of them do flybys a million times, and you're going, he picked up the wings again. He's going to make another pass around, and you're just going to have to live with it. Sometimes decisions are made by committee. Sometimes decisions are difficult between partners. Sometimes not everybody agrees. Sometimes the banker won't let them do it. Sometimes they have a particular key employee they want to do something for, and all of a sudden they find out that weasel's on their way out the door anyway, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It just goes on and on. That's a price you have to learn to pay. Next, you need to learn how to ask provocative and emotional fact-finding closing questions to clients and their other advisors. I cannot stress this one enough. A lot of financial services reps are of the opinion, I'll go work with business owners instead of heads of households, because they make their decisions based upon logic and math and what sounds reasonable. I'm going to tell you openly, directly, you think decisions are made emotionally in the head of household marketplace? You haven't seen anything. Decisions with business owners are highly emotionally charged. And if you can learn with nerves and with a certain degree of empathy and everything else that comes with it, if you can do the questioning and be provocative and be willing to put yourself on the railroad track and on the tree, you can get this done. But you better be prepared to do that. You wanted to know one of the questions, right? Here it comes. I'm dealing with somebody who I'm not sure has figured out what to do on their business continuation planning. Mr. Business Owner, if a certain trigger and event were to happen today, and let's use your death as that trigger and event today, would you want your spouse or your heirs to have the asset, meaning the business, or the cash it's worth? Simple question, highly emotionally charged, especially in the presence of the other partners. Oh, my wife. No, I hate that. I hate her. Oh, sorry. Okay. Let's say they're by themselves. Do you know? It is, I guess I'm perverse, but I just love it, because your job is to shut up. Not smirk. Not smile. Not grin. Not wet your pants. Because you can cut the tension with a knife. You're going to sit there with a consultative face, as if you were their brother or sister. Come on. Help me see your world through your eyes. Help me get you what you deserve. Which answer is it? Do you know the longest I've had to wait is 9 minutes? 9 minutes. His wife was there. Jake, give me an answer. No, I got to work this out. Their palms sweat. Their faces get white. They get ashen. You know why that is? He loves. There are several things that business owners think about. They're worried about, while they're alive, how can I guarantee an income for myself and my wife? Second is, how do I get out of this business alive? Third, if I get out of this business alive, how do I guarantee an income for me or my spouse? Next, if I don't get out of this business alive, how do I guarantee an income for my spouse? And lastly, what is going to be my legacy? See, they've spent 20 years building an empire of glass, steel, and stone, and a triggering event is going to ask them to put it in reverse. Do they have the 20 years? No. In reverse, they don't have the 20 years. Do you understand that? And they and their professional advisors and their family and their spouses have joined in what's called the silent conspiracy. Okay? That's what I call it. The parents don't want to deal with their mortality. The kids don't want to appear as chirping little what? Greedy little whatever. The accountant doesn't want to rock the boat and just kicks a can down the road because he doesn't want to lose the account. The attorney will nudge occasionally, but not hard enough to lose the account. And they just stay in this conspiracy and it goes forward. And you, Joe Quarterback, have the audacity to show up and ask me a tough question. Do you want her to have the asset or the cash it's worth? Because each answer has a meaning. And by the way, regardless of how they answer it, I have five more questions. I'm not going to tell you what those are. Sorry. All right. I have five more questions, and each of them dig to China, but they get right down to the point. And all of a sudden they go, oh my gosh, we're finally arrived at the time we're going to have to talk about this. And we're going to have to find a way to pay for this. You need to really learn how to dig down deep to get into that. Lastly, you're going to need to let go of any scarcity mentality and learn to partner with other professionals to get the job done. I had to learn this myself. I remember I was so arrogant in my first 5 years of the business. And then I got really clocked on a case with a law firm here in town. And I grabbed a guy who was top of the table in town. And I knew he knew this firm distantly. He'd tried in there before. They'd thrown him out on another case. I knew about this. And we got together, and I watched him go in and very calmly, with four or five questions and that good old boy language he had, just disassemble the case. We made enough I made an entire year's income off that case. The renewals alone were just kept my office paid for 5 years. It was just ridiculous. Do you know, to this day, I still use some of the paraphrases he used that day. Sometimes you don't have a skill set to get this done. Sometimes you have to knock on the doors of somewhere else. The biggest case I ever wrote, it was in Southern California about 12 years ago, and I found out through the back door that there was a member of the M Financial Group. Does anybody in the room know who that is? Or a large hemisphere producer group? Okay. It's a person I'd read about, knew about, went to his office, knocked on his door, told him what the deal was. He says, are you sure you want to do this? And we worked it out. And he horned me, because what happened is when I got out of the car to go in the office, he says, well, the deal's changed. I'm taking a little bit bigger cut, and this is why. Right then and there, I thought, okay, I'll just throw him out in the road, you know, go in by myself, right? And I thought, no, come on, see how it works. And sure enough, go ahead.
Yeah. With more than one person.
Right.
There was a study done years ago that if one person goes out on a sale, they would sell, let's say, 1,000 letters. Another person goes on a sale independently, and they do 1,000. So the both goes out and go out, they would make 2,000. If they two went out together, they would make 3,000.
Right. Yeah, they understand that concept. Okay. Okay. I don't care where you. Yeah. There are. Thank you very much. There are some particular skill sets you need with particular business cases. And you know the old saying of walking away with 50 to 70% of something's better than 100% of what? Nothing. I had to learn that bitter lesson. Everybody in the business has got to figure that out over time, you know? So that's something to think about. All right, let's get into, now you need to know, no, we nailed the case. It was unbelievable. It, you know, we each made six figures, and the first digit wasn't one or two. So what does that tell you? Okay. It was a good case. And there's another guy. I mean, to this day, I still use two of his paraphrases. All right? That's just the way it works. Okay? He's now retired. He's got MS. But all right. I have a list of 25 moves or stunts or operational inefficiencies or whatever you want to call it, that can kill or damage a business. We're going to talk about six today because they pertain to what we're doing here with this NAFA meeting. Some of it's going to be intuitive, some of it isn't. When do we have to end? 4:30? Good, I have 35 minutes, so I'm really going to have to hurry. And I just want to walk you through six. Now, on two of these, we're going to use a couple of vignettes from a software that we've purchased long ago that explains this, but only on two of them. So let's get down to what they are. First one is, there's plenty of time for planning. Okay? What's the real talk? Read it.
Not using benefit plans and cash flow to properly recruit, retain, and reward key employees and owners.
Can somebody tell me what you think this means? Take a stab, JR. Yeah. Okay, 10 years ago, we started a trough period of 4 to 5 years where things were so bad in the economy that an employer could say to somebody, even a key employee who thought of leaving, what was the answer? There's the what? There's the door, okay, because there's enough of you. Are we in that environment today? No. More than ever, talent in an organization will keep it alive. And you have to find ways to retain people. Now, that problem presents itself just like it used to 15 years ago, and it prompts business owners to make some foolish errors. And let's walk through what that is. Let's do some role playing. Okay. All right, Blake. All right, here we go. This guy here, all right, he's one of your key people, and he's got intellectual property that he brought with him. You spent 5 years recruiting him. You finally got him here. He's been up your learning curve with you for 5 years, et cetera. You and your other partner are thinking maybe even you might groom him for a minority ownership and maybe even do a key employee buyout sometime or whatever, right? Okay. And you have a feeling his resume is going somewhere else or he's looking. What, assuming we'd never met and assuming you weren't in the financial services business and didn't have a good accountant or attorney to tell you what to do, what do you think are the top two or three ways you're going to try to put the zap on his head to stay here?
A bonus.
That's always number one, okay? Let's pay him more money. Okay, you find out his house is mostly paid for. He only has one child, and he's already in the 28-plus bracket federal. What did the bonus do for him? Knocked him into the 33. That's what it did. Okay, all right. That's what it did, okay? And after the second or third year, you find out that throwing money on the IRS altar and burning it wasn't worth it, right? Okay? All right? So what's your next approach?
More time off.
Let's not get into soft paper type of approaches, but that could... Hang on. You're wrecking my thunder here. That is not going to be his number two choice, okay? It is not going to be. Go ahead.
Remember, I'm not in the financial services.
Straight, see, quit. You're thinking like an insurance guy, a woman. Okay, quit it. Quit all that. We're talking to a guy that went to Wharton and got his MBA, and he's running a research firm. He has no squat of any of that stuff you're talking about. Didn't have a chance, okay? Okay. Okay. Oh, no. That's child's play. He's really going to get dangerous and loose with his company. Guess what he's going to do? Stock. He's going to dilute ownership. I know. We'll put the zap on his head by making him a 5% owner. You and your partner decide to do it. You're now 45% owners each, and he's 10. You're going, wow. You go home and tell your wife, well, I'm part of this deal. You know, maybe you have a merit scale, phantom stock deal, whatever. All of a sudden, one day, you, the key employee, you find out what a minority position is really worth. Yeah, what's it worth?
Nothing.
Did you get to join in on any of the financial decisions of the firm, marketing decisions, proprietary property, intellectual property, anything? In fact, they don't even take you to lunch with them when they talk about this stuff because they don't have to. They already did their job, which is put the zap on your head, and it worked. You were completely zapped. They just rub you top and stick you on the roof. You're there. Okay? Now, you could exact warfare in reverse, because as a minority owner, you have the right to open the books. And you can do all that kind of nonsense. And pretty soon, they just decide it's not worth to deal with you anymore. And they got nearly the 10 years out of you. It's 9.5 years. This kind of stuff happens all the time. And you force them to sell the shares back to who? You. You give them a little bit of a premium to say goodbye. It's gone. They didn't work, did it? Okay? Go ahead. Could. That all of that's happened. Now, the third thing you might pull off is you're going to do what is very common. I know that person isn't the only key employee. I'm behind in my retirement savings goals. My partner's behind his retirement savings goals. I know a way to take care of these people and all the other little chirping birds in the organization that are crying for more benefits and everything else, because we have a homogenous problem across the board here we've got to take care of. So you're going to go out and you're going to put together a big employee benefit program. Now let me ask you this. Are you going to go the qualified route, which is the group route, even though it's tax advantage to the firm as far as deductions and everything else, but has no selectivity? Or are you going to go the non-qualified route that has full selectivity but may or may not have the tax benefits in the short run that this one will have? Which route are you typically going to go? I just gave you a hint. You're going to go this route. You're going to go the qualified route. So you're going to do what all the business owners do that we see often. You're going to put together a bodacious, safe harbor 401k right out of the gate, or maybe a heavy matching scheme that isn't safe harbor. You're going to have this group long-term disability thing. You're going to have all this kind of stuff because you think, you know, I'm going to take care of myself and everybody else. And at the end of the day, we do the analysis and we find out you're spending $27 for you to have the ability to save about $6. How do you feel, Mr. Business Owner? And by the way, you don't even know how that person even feels, especially when he walks into your office and says, that large cap growth fund sucks. Okay, and then that's you find out it didn't work. Even though you're allowed to save a lot of money pre-tax, he ended up taking care of everybody because the vehicle he used in the box is not fit for the job. See, this is what business owners do. They do not understand that employee benefit package can be a multi-layer cake. They only think in terms of one layer and one dimension. They think you can do group, qualified arena, or you can do maybe the non-qualified arena like a deferred comp or a SERP or something like that. They do not understand that I literally can do several layers on the cake. They don't get this. I can do a really heavy non-qualified benefit package to take care of the owners and the key employees, and then a really light, kind of nearly superficial next layer on top of it that's a group plan so that everybody can't say, well, my employer doesn't do anything for me. There is a way to put, you know, a census to sleep. You can put employees to sleep with like that. It's easy, all right? And then the third layer is some other thing that deals with the business owner's estates where we're pulling a lot of money out tax favorably, like the 412 is an example where we can carve out just the owners. That kind of thing. They don't understand this. They think it's either or. They don't understand that it's several. It damages their companies. They spend too much money. They create class warfare. They get themselves entangled with the IRS and the Department of Labor. They do all kinds of problems. And at the end of the day, they end up spending all this money for the privilege of saving a little bit, and they never do put the zap on your head. Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. They worship one thing, and that's all they're going to have. Okay, next price. Not knowing what your business is worth. Real talk. Go ahead. Mess up your business planning and financials and your financing by not knowing what your business is really worth and then having that be reflected in your documents. Why does this matter? How many of you are bankers by chance? How many of you had prior learning experience or work experience as a banker? In my last session, I had a commercial credit analyst in the group. She can answer this perfectly. I wish she was here again. What's it like going to get a loan if you don't know what your business is worth? Right? There are a host of financial issues if you're a business owner, that if you really don't know what your business is worth, you've got a problem. Oh, by the way, while we're talking about that, is there a difference between what the business owner perceives their business is worth and what it really is worth? Is there a difference?
Yeah.
They round up in their heads. Their account rounds down, and it's somewhere in the middle. Okay? That's the way it works, right? Let's walk through another reason why it matters. Now, I hope the sound works in here. I haven't tested it yet. See if we can do it. Grab that chair for me. Oh, there's one over here.
So, how are the kids?
They're doing well, considering. Listen, I don't want you to think I'm trying to be difficult.
Oh, Ellen, I know that.
Unfortunately, Jack didn't leave me a whole lot.
Sure.
What I do have are three kids and a mortgage. And when I found out what I was getting from the buy-sell agreement,
I know.
Look, there's no other way to say this. It's just unfair. I know the business is worth more than that.
Ellen, that agreement was drawn up almost 10 years ago.
So?
Well, the truth is, Jack and I just never got around to updating it. Believe it or not, that's what happened.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying that if there was more, I would give it to you. I would. But the only way for me to raise more cash would be to sell the business. And if I do that, then I'd lose everything I've worked for.
Look, I don't know anything about that. What I do know is that this business is worth more than what I'm getting in the buy-sell agreement. Listen, I'm not trying to make trouble. And I'm not saying that I don't believe you.
Good, because what I'm telling
you... I just think it would be a good idea if I spoke to an attorney. I just want what I'm entitled to.
You think this stuff happens? All the time. Okay, now let's take a look at the sins of the fathers here, okay? Here we go. They at least had a business continuation plan drafted at one time. They may have done the structure correctly for the tax consequences and all that stuff. Let's just make that assumption. They pegged a value. They pegged the rule, whether it was going to be a lump sum or a series of buyouts over time or whatever. They did all those things. They addressed maybe even the cost of the buyer's dollars. Yet they didn't review the thing. And in the meantime, in the 10 or 12 years since it happened, and between the trigger and event where the death of the owner happened, what changed? The business changed. It increased in value. All right, she's obligated by contract to do it, but she obviously also has a way to litigate her way out. This is going to damage this business, could possibly kill it. This is a very, very common problem, by the way. Very common. You know, I've seen just about everything. I've seen people say, yeah, we have a business continuation plan, just like Van talked about this morning. They'll have the legal documents, but no way to fund it, to execute the deal. Okay? They have no way to execute the deal whatsoever. Or the legal documents are incorrect, or even what's even more damaging, I found out, besides not making changes, the legal language that they originally agreed to is not what they want executed today. And I'm going to give you a prime example. About 7 years ago, it took me almost 2 years to get into a very, very large excavation company here in town. If I dropped the name, you'd know who they are. And one of the big five things I always talk about in an opening appointment with a business owner is their business continuation plan. Oh, yeah, we got that taken care of, you know, all smug and... All four of them sitting there. There's four of them with disparate degrees, percentages of ownership in all the different operating companies. Okay, fine. When was it done? And they told me whatever. I reached over to the guy's printer and I pulled out four blank pieces of paper. And I handed each one of them a piece of paper and a pen. And I said, okay, each one of you draw me a stick figure drawing of how the thing's executed. Identify the people by initial and walk me through how this thing is going to happen. Okay, of the four, how many of them could even draw a third grade stick figure drawing? Two. Of the four, only two could draw the stick figure drawing. Do you think the pictures matched? No. Guys. Well, no, it's like this. And then they get into this big rousing argument, which I loved. And anyway, so then they get on this thing because now they're excited, right? Okay, by chance, do you have the document here? Yeah, we paid like $25,000 for this crap, and it comes out, and it's all this stuff in this big document, and I find the buy-sell agreement for the main company, the one that has the most value. I pop it open, I read through it, and I go, okay, this is great. It's a wait-and-see buy-sell. It has four phases and four passes, and all the passes sunset in 60 days instead of 30. Not bad, huh? Okay, so, and it shows who's going to do what and execute what. And I read through it and told him, and I drew a stick figure on the dry erase board exactly how it's going to be. That's not what we wanted. And I said, okay, it's 4 in the afternoon. You guys are going to be going home pretty soon, right? And they said, yeah. I said, drive careful. Don't do anything stupid. Don't get on ATV. Don't get on I-15. Don't nothing. Just drive home careful. Why? Because I said, if you die today, one of you, you litigate your way out of this. You know, and two of them got in a really hot argument in front of me. Hot. And I just loved it. Because what have I got? I found out a near fatal error in this business. They didn't know what the business was worth, and the agreement wasn't going to be executed correctly. Okay? Now, let's walk through another scenario. Come on.
There are a lot of issues.
No, I don't want that either. Next. Okay.
Thank you for coming in. I know it's soon after the funeral.
You sounded worried over the phone, Gene. What's
wrong? Sit down, Carol, please. Steve, Michelle? Look, I'm not going to kid around. We've got problems.
What kind of problems?
Well, for starters, who's going to run the company? Larry never formalized who would take over if something happened to him. That's something we need to deal with now.
That's easy. Dad always told me I'd run the company. Anything happened to him?
Oh, please. He never said anything to me.
That's just what I said. He said it to me.
Look, I'm not going to just listen to what you
Michelle,
said because you
I've been
said
working
it. Wait. We didn't come here to watch you fight. Gene, what about Tom? Tom? Larry thought the world of him. He's head of sales and he knows the company.
Mom, I'm his son. He knows the company better than I do.
Steven.
Hey, time out. Listen to me. We may not even have a business to argue about. Larry's will divides the worth of the business in half. We've done the initial calculations. And you two have to pay a tax liability of almost $5 million.
What?
That can't be right.
What are we going to do?
We'll get a loan.
Don't count on it. We're talking about a lot of money, and for a company that just lost its primary asset. Your fault? The way I see it, you're going to have a problem with any bank, including the one you're dealing with now.
Oh, great.
Even if you can get a loan, think about the debt service. The value of your company may drop once you incur this debt.
Mom, what about Dad's life insurance?
That policy pays $2 million to your mother, but it's not near enough.
How can this happen?
It happens. Carol, you know how long I've been after Larry to meet with me and his financial planner. Look, we all know he didn't mean to leave things this way. But there was always another fire to put out. Always another deadline. He just didn't get around to it.
What a mess.
Come on, you can do it. Okay. So, this business killer is I'm too busy running the company to plan things. And the real speak behind it is I am unwilling or unable, for some reason, I am not grooming or preparing or planning for the proper successors. We're back into this conspiracy. This is especially true in a family business. Notice all the things that this little vignette addressed. Not only did they not have the right person groomed or ready, they thought everybody was going to live forever. You know, the conspiracy rolls on and kicks the can. Did you notice they talked about this Tom guy, right? He was a non-family member. They hadn't bothered to find a way to reward that person for 20 years of service. The kids were possibly unsuitable. We don't know. Is there a liquidity trap in the company? Yes. Now, by the way, this was recorded before the exemption for estates, you know, went up to $5.5 million per head, so you can see why the damage was displayed that way. Nonetheless, here we have an estate tax issue. By the way, do you believe or do you not believe that a lot of business owners don't do their business continuation planning correctly, especially between non-family partners, and if the other one dies and his estate gets entangled in an estate tax obligation, guess who your new partner is? You, the survivor, have a live partner. Live wire works 24 hours. It's the IRS. Internal Revenue Service. And they don't name a building after you or an aircraft carrier after you. That's right. That's the way it works. I say the U.S. Treasury. It sounds polite and whatever. But anyway, okay, it's the way it works. These are very common issues. Very common. Happen a lot. They will kill a business immediately. Also, let's say they do find a way to work this out somehow, but in the meantime, cash gets short. Some people have been there a long time get offended because they're not part of the ownership change or whatever. And let's say 30% of your key employees bolt out the door. How does your company look? Remember the question. If a trigger event were to happen today and it's your death, would you want your heirs to have the asset or the cash it's worth? Sometimes you may think they can carry the asset and they drive it right into the ground and they don't get to walk away with the cash it's worth. It's a real issue. By the way, if you think this isn't common, take a look at this. If I can get it punched up here. Come on. This is the PricewaterhouseCoopers. I've subscribed to all the PricewaterhouseCoopers bulletins. And this is the latest family report, if I can find it. There we go. I want to look at figure 22. Right here. Many companies haven't prepared for the sickness or death of a key manager or shareholder. How many don't have plans? 62%. Off to the right. Further evidence that some family firms may be less ready for the future than they realize come from the fact that 62% haven't made any provision for dealing with family and business issues if a key manager or shareholder gets seriously sick or dies. Gets worse. Let's go up a page right here. Nearly half of all companies have no succession plans whatsoever. Is there room for you to work with business owners? Yes. By the way, while we're talking about this, some reps in our business are really worried about getting into this, even drawing the stick figures or whatever. I've heard this many times. I don't want to get charged with UPO, which is the unauthorized practice of law. Don't worry a bit about that. If you're talking in generalities, and you've learned a few things, tax-wise and or legal, and you can draw some stick figures, you've actually done the client a service. You've opened them up to a different mindset, and when you do get them in front of the attorney you want to take them to, or if you get stuck with theirs and you have to do a little training or education or whatever, you've actually saved money on the clock. Because the client is fully versed in all this kind of stuff. They can tell the attorney, yeah, we understand what that is. Tell us why we ought to do this over this or whatever. Don't worry about that kind of thing. Okay. All right. Next. This is one of my favorites. Okay, I got 9 minutes and to get the last three done. Good. That event will never happen to me. Okay. What I'm talking about is a certain trigger and event where you have what's called a living death and it creates a zombie business. And I'm going to do a role play to show you how this is. I already tipped you off. When I say living death, what am I talking about? There we go. Okay. Now, nobody thinks about this. Nobody. No accountants. I've never met an attorney that's aware of this. happily, 70 to 90% of the people in financial services retail don't think about this or ask about this. I've used this to unbundle a lot of cases just by asking this question. Here we go. This is great. Who am I going to pick on? Let's see. All right. Two of you, this is a key employee, and the two of you are 50% shareholders. Ready? Okay, now, let's deal with him first. Now, let's make it, okay. His wife calls up on a certain day. And by the way, this is somebody you spent 5 to 10 years taking up a learning curve. You may have even had a trouble recruiting him. You haven't found a way to retain him yet, but you view him as an important part of the company. Ready? Okay. Now, All right. Now, he calls up and he says, I haven't been feeling good. I've already missed one day. I'm probably going to be out a couple of days. I'm going to go to the doctor. Let me ask the two of you this. Are you going to fire him? You going to pay him? While he's gone for 3 days, you're going to pay him. He's a key employee. Think it over. Can you afford to disaffect this guy? Really? Think it over. You're going to pay him. What is life like for the two of you at work while he's gone?
Miserable.
For 3 days?
Well, he does everything.
You're a thin firm, I'll tell you. All right, well, anyway, okay. All right, we're 3 days. All right, you with me? All right, now let's say this goes on for 3 months, and out of the 3 months, he's only legitimately worked about 12 days. He isn't sure what's wrong with him, maybe even knows, but he says it's going to get better. Let's revisit the same three questions.
I'm starting to feel a little bit better.
Are you going to fire him? This isn't a Monty Python movie. Okay. Are you going to fire him? No.
I think we'd have discussions about how replaceable
he is. Let's view this person as pretty important, and he's shown up for work part-time occasionally. He's even hit his important projects from home. You going to fire him?
No.
You going to pay him? Yep. What's life like for the two of you at work? Starting to get miserable. This goes on for 9 months. Revisit the same three questions. You going to fire him?
Probably.
You're going to get dang close. Are you going to pay him during the 9 months? You want to take a chance disaffecting this guy? Really? Even if you choose to pay him and you don't fire him, what's your life like?
Hell.
It's bad. Let me give you an example why you might not want to disaffect him. I had a case in Boise, it was a seed company in the Treasure Valley that had hired a scientist after 5 years of grooming and getting him over, and then he brought over some other scientists, and they brought some proprietary intellectual capital with them. And what happened was, is he went into a disability for 10 months. They quit paying him. They disaffected him. 6 months later, he got better and went to a competitor in Oregon and nearly killed him. Okay, think about it. Now, he's a key employee. You can easily think about doing that. No, okay. Let's say you left. Done. Now, this is just down between the two of you. It's him this time. First scenario. Quit that insurance crap. You're just a scientist. You don't know squat about that stuff. Okay? You haven't even thought about this. All right? He's gone for like the 3 days. You going to pay him? Yep. He's a partner. 50. You going to fire him? Not a chance. What's life like for you? Measurable. Well, let's go through this scenario. You know how it's going to work. We go out the 3 months. You can't fire him. You can't whatever. You're still cutting him a check. Now, I'm going to ask you this question. This goes on for 9 or 10 months. 9 or 10 months. And it goes into the next calendar year from when the event started. And you're a C Corp. Are you going to fire him? No. Are you going to pay him? Yes. Congratulations. You just violated a minimum of 6 statutes of the Internal Revenue Service. Okay, we're going to start with a reasonable compensation. The second thing we're going to do is find out that everything you deducted as a wage to him in the current year is no longer allowable. You're a C Corp, it'll be treated as a dividend to him. You will have to go back, redo your 1120, and your personal returns to reflect a dividend received by you also. What have I done to your corporation? Driven a giant hole in it, that's what I've done. Wouldn't it have been better? In his case, if we'd had a plan to continue his income and have somebody else cut the check, some vendor cut the check to him to keep him gone for a while. The money you normally would have paid him, you could now pay to a replacement or several replacements and preserve your corporate cash flow. Between the two of you, now we've got into a buy-sell business continuation issue. It's also mingled with a salary continuation issue. He's interested in staying around. Your two wives used to communicate till you thought about cutting him off and suing him or firing him, getting him out or forcing him out. Now you don't speak, not even at church. Your key employees know all about this. Your other key employees stubbed their toe, just like him, and what are they going to come to you for? Well, they continued his income for a while after he stubbed his toe. You created class warfare. Your business is going to hell fast. I have 2 degrees here. I can say it. I've plowed my money in here. I can say what I want. All right. Okay. Anyway. Okay. Now, the point is, nobody thinks about this. And it's an event that's 3 to 4 times more likely to happen than either one of you dying. I come in and find out you have a business continuation plan based upon a trigger that's death. And I find out you have life insurance. I go, shh, why'd you even do that? You haven't actually bought the stuff that matters yet. This preservation of corporate cash flow for the inability of either a key employee and or an owner to perform the material substantial duties of their occupation is everything, and nobody thinks about it. Nobody. It is stunning how nobody even thinks about that. Next, we'll try to get these two done in a hurry. Next, my business will feed my retirement. Real talk. Carry all your eggs in one basket and you'll risk cracking all of them. If I take a look at the total asset base of most business owners, what percentage of that list does their business comprise? Most of it. The problem is a lot of business owners are convinced they don't need to do any planning while they're working because they think they'll eventually just sell their business and that will comprise most of their retirement, that somehow it has guarantees associated with it. Guess what we're finding out in the current economic situation in the United States? That is no longer true. That's what we're finding out. You want to know why? Because the world has got small from globalization. Interstate commerce is no longer, there's no barrier to entry anymore for this kind of thing. It is hard to know what your business is going to be worth even more than 5 years out, let alone this 15, 20 or whatever. And it is amazing how many business owners you will meet will say, I took a look at some of this stuff and, you know, I don't want to do it. And they never thought about finding a way to pull money tax favorably for themselves or anybody else they want to take care of on a selective basis out of the business during their working years. You'll ask them, you'll go, shh, do you own any other funds like mutual funds or a separate managed account or anything else? Well, yeah. Do you own just one? No, I own several. Why? To diversify my risk. Well, you're not doing that with the major asset you're depending on for retirement. Oh, no, my business is the best thing around. Those of us, I'm looking right at Boyd because he knows what I'm talking about. Those of us who have been in business a long time know a lot of guys who had to stay with the business because when it came around to try to sell it, what happened? So now they're working into their what? 70s and 80s, right? Because the timing wasn't right or something happened or it wasn't what they imagined. This will kill a business because it takes the heart right out of the owner of the business and the person driving the enterprise. And lastly, you can't beat Uncle Sam. Uncle Sam loves business owners who ignore taxation issues. They really do. Let me ask you a question that requires a lot of steel to ask a business owner, but think about this really carefully. If you are a business owner and you have a partner or partners, do you have at least a near right to ask them if they've done their estate planning? Yes or no? Okay, experience is when you ask most business partners, do you know if your partner has done their estate planning fully and is it updated and is it, you know, up to snuff and what they want to do and is it dovetailed with your business continuation plans? The answer back typically is, well, that's not my business. Absolutely, it's your business. Let's go back to an example, the two of you. You have a buy-sell agreement. It's a cross-purchase, let's say. we're assuming that upon your death, you've done your estate planning, so your shares go to either your heirs or your spouse. You're obligated to buy the shares from the spouse, and she's obligated to sell, right? Instead, you have the audacity to not do anything and die intestate. Do you know who the sellers are? Do you have a clue who the sellers are, scattered among his three wives in two states? Do you have any idea? Plus, he spent most of his life living in a community property state. Do you have any idea?
The insurance was okay. At least cheaper for him.
Yeah. Okay, all right. It is, wouldn't it be of interest before you enter into these things that are going to affect your livelihood? You could be the surviving shareholder and not walk away with the cash it's worth. Think about it. Because you didn't ask him, hey, what's your estate plan? What does it look like? This matters. This really matters. Business owners ignore estate taxes. They ignore cash flow issues with tax. They ignore this business continuation thing. It will damage and kill a business in a heartbeat. It is just nasty, okay? And it doesn't go away, by the way, all right? Well, we've used all the time. In fact, we've gone past, and I thank you for your time. Have a good night. Get home safe.